It is time to go racing at Suzuka. And the Japanese Grand Prix is underway. Max Verstappen gets the launch off the line he was looking for. Alonso did get a good jump, but couldn't do anything with it. Side by side we go with the McLaren and the Ferrari. Lando Norris is in third. It's as you were. Verstappen, Perez, Norris, then Sainz. And Fernando Alonso couldn't make it work on those soft tyres. He remains in fifth as they make their way through and off into the wall. Off into the wall goes the two cars and a big crash into the tyre barrier.
Yeah, it's going to be an immediate safety car then. It's heavy impact for Ricciardo and Albon. So Albon then gets a decent chance to come alongside, and there's the touch. So there was the driver on the inside of Ricciardo. Albon was sort of aiming towards a space that was closing. Daniel's come across on Alex Albon. I don't think that was particularly fair from Ricciardo there. I think he did have more space on the left-hand side.
Take two at Suzuka is five lights away. And the Japanese Grand Prix is go once again. And it was a good reaction time for Perez. Verstappen had to chop across. The top four are still in the same order. Who's feeling brave? The top five are still in the same order as Piastri tries to put pressure on Alonso and is not able to do so. They make their way through the S's. Can they all get through cleanly this time? The answer is yes to that. And it is Charles Leclerc, the big winner off the line. He's managed to dart ahead of Lewis Hamilton, the medium tyre trumping the hard.
Yeah, Pierre gave me a hit at the side. Let me know if it's okay.
Will do.
George Russell diving to the inside and retaking the place. He's up to ninth, and that is Valtteri Bottas saying goodbye to Esteban Ocon. Russell up to ninth, Bottas up to 11th, making moves early on with the DRS. Lando Norris is into the pits, and the first McLaren in fourth place responding to the Mercedes now being on the right tyre. Let's see where Lando Norris comes out. McLaren dropped him in to a lovely gap. It looks like they have, and Norris has a bit of clear air. Next car up the road is Stroll.
What's happening with Yuki Tsunoda? The hard tyres having made a stop. Gasly ahead.
Hold on a minute. Oh. We're not going to see a move here, are we? What? Wonderful stuff. The Mercedes are swapping positions. Lewis Hamilton asking the team what they wanted to do. Russell goes up to fifth. So Max Verstappen has made his pit stop. You see that on the left-hand side. And Verstappen comes out. Oh, that is unbelievably close to try and go around the outside. Lando Norris goes the long way round and takes the place away from Lewis Hamilton. Lewis Hamilton under pressure. We're heading to the 130R. So close. And Hamilton has to cede the place. Oh, they're going so quickly as they turn left at that corner. Perez on the new mediums up to fifth.
I wonder if the Mercedes are trying to lock into different strategies today, and Hamilton's maybe on a long one stopper, Russell on something different, and that's why they swap positions fairly quickly.
Perez is going to line up once again at the 130R. Is he able to quickly get past George Russell? Russell has to give the room another pass on board with Perez, who sweeps by, makes use of that medium rubber, and takes fourth place. As we're going to go very, very tight. No one wants to get passed into the spoon corner, but Hamilton's going to have to give the place, and he does so. Carlos Sainz, winner of the Australian Grand Prix, is up to sixth. Can Verstappen make the move quickly and cleanly? That's the question we're posing as we build up to 200 miles per hour and Leclerc tries to defend. But Max Verstappen retakes the lead of the race.
Russell can't turn the Mercedes at turn 11 and Sainz is right with him. And it just, you feel so helpless in their position with these guys on much fresher tyres, softer compound as well for Sainz. On the inside into spoon and through he goes. It's an absolute carbon copy of the pass he did on Hamilton.
There's Perez making the move to the inside and taking third position. Clean pass, making the move. Lando Norris really chooses his battles carefully in Formula One. Incredible spectacle outside the commentary box there. There's a huge gaggle of cars came into the pits at the same time. Magnussen, Bottas, Sargent, and a change for position. Look at this, look at this. And we've got a terrific move there for Yuki Tsunoda. The crowd are cheering once again. He's found himself out ahead there, and they all came in together, bottled up by Kevin Magnussen. That was the gap that Mercedes were waiting to clear, and you can see why.
it's as if, so on the last stint, Bottas pitted before anyone else, had a slow stop, but because he had fresher tyres for one lap, managed to effectively undercut his way back to where he was.
Guys, well done, thank you. Top job, guys. Top job.
Good. Charles Leclerc out qualified by Carlos Sainz on a couple of occasions in a row now. Wide moment for Leclerc, who goes off the road and loses the place. Sergio Perez is up to second position. Can Lando Norris inflict more hurt on Charles Leclerc? There could be a real opportunity for Stroll to try and make the place on Tsunoda, who's trying to get by ancient tyres on that car, but Hülkenberg holds the place, and this is the worst case scenario for Tsunoda, because now Stroll can tuck in, and it's getting really tight. Can he do another amazing move? My goodness me, it was nearly that corner again for RB. That was so tight, and he's trying to use the extra grip. 27 lap old tyres, he's gonna do it again, and the crowd absolutely love it. Tsunoda through at the S's for the second time in the Grand Prix. And Sainz will have the fresh tyres to attack, but he's going to lose the track position to the names that you can now see passing him on the circuit. Degner 2 has been causing issues all the way through, and I believe that Sargeant has gone off the track there. And that is not a great place to reverse a Formula One car onto. Well, here he is, building up to 200 miles per hour out of the slipstream. DRS wide open. Carlos Sainz fights his way by to fourth position. Right now, he's focusing on getting past his teammate and moving up. There's the defense from Charles Leclerc. But the DRS and the speed belongs to Carlos Sainz. Oh, that's a late dive bomb move, or an attempt for one for George Russell, going wheel to wheel with Oscar Piastri. Piastri refusing to give that one up, keeps the track position. Russell will be on the radio to complain. And George Russell's got a big opportunity now. George Russell, suddenly Piastri is going to let Russell out of the slipstream. He can't defend. They both had DRS, but George Russell takes the place on the final lap of the Grand Prix. Downhill to victory for the reigning world champion. Max Verstappen returns to victory. Max Verstappen wins the Japanese Grand Prix. And it's a Red Bull 1-2. Thanks to Sergio Perez.
This is the Outlap F1 Podcast featuring America's own Cody, Andy, and Deanna. Your one-stop shop for Formula One news, insights, race previews, and reviews. Join us on the Outlap. What is up, Outlap F1 Nation? This is going to be episode number 10 of season 6 of the Outlap F1 podcast. It's our 2024 Japanese Grand Prix race review. You've got Andy, and I'm along with Cody tonight. Cody, long time no see. I think it's been a whole 13 hours. we were actually together watching the race at a friend's house last night. So Cody got to see me in full race mode. All my friends got to see me in full race mode, which is something that normally a lot of people don't get a chance to see. But how'd you survive the late night and early morning?
I actually didn't turn out too bad. I slept in a lot this morning, but yeah, you had a great time yesterday going out, enjoying the weather with some golf, playing some poker, which I kicked some serious ass at, and yeah, followed by watching the race right up until 2 in the morning. Not too bad. Kind of a little scary driving home and seeing like 8 deer along the way when it's that late at night, but
yeah,
it was a great time.
Well, I was actually relieved to get the text. As it turns out, I had made it home on, like, fumes. But I had enough gas to get home, so I was okay. And then today, the nice weather of last night was replaced by a large tranche of rain going through the area today. So it was very wet, very cold. So I wasn't exactly thrilled to be out and about. But I've done the best that I can. I slept in very late or early this morning as well. Or however you'd say that, but yes, I slept a lot after the late night, and I'm sure you are dreaming of pocket nines and catching two more nines on the flop. So well mm-hmm. done, sir. That was an epic hand. That everybody else would have gone broke on that hand as well. But congratulations on your night of domination at the poker table. But that's not why you're all here. We may do the Outlap Poker podcast at some point, but that's not why you're here. You're here because we'd like to learn and talk a little bit about Formula One, and we're about to do that. So if you found our show, welcome, as David Croft would say. You can find it, as always, on Twitter, Instagram, Discord, Reddit, and, of course, YouTube at Outlap F1 Podcast is the handle for all of those places. If you're watching on YouTube and you like what you see, you can click the like and subscribe button, and that'll help get our content to you a little bit quicker. And if you're on your favorite podcasting app, and just a general reminder, we do have our new Apple Podcast thread. You can click the 5-star button on that. You can just refollow the show like you did with the old one. And you'll automatically get all the latest and greatest episodes as we put them out there. Spotify, the historic old threads and the new threads continue to work. So we're all good on that platform. And a number of you have gone to Spotify. I've seen that kind of in the data. So just as long as you're getting the episodes, doesn't matter to us where it comes from or how you listen. We're just glad that you are. So thank you very much for the continued support on all of that. Email the show. You can email the show chatnow@outlapf1.com. We'll take you there. Still working on the website. This may be a long, yearly long project. I'm realizing that I'm not a web programmer. So I'm going to have to kind of teach myself and try to figure that out. So we're working on that. I need to get some time to do that. So hopefully when there's a mini break in the F1 schedule, I can actually try to get back to that. But, just as a general reminder, thank you so much for our continued monetary supporters and everybody who supports the show, including Dean Warwick, Yuri Dolchester, Paul Weaver, Quentin Warden, Kevin Kelly, Regan Stanzik, Timothy Brown, and, of course, Jonathan Scott. If you'd like to become a member of the hashtag Outlap F1 Nation, you can see our link in our show notes. It's our anchor page, $5. All goes into making the show better. All goes into reinvesting in equipment that we already have. To upgrade it, and also then investing in some new equipment so we can do some new and cool things with that. And we thank you for all of the support there. Just as a reminder, you can also check out our code OUTLAP, that's OUTLAP, with the good folks at Manscaped. That will get you 20% off and free shipping from them. All right, with the particulars now out of the way, we'll get into our headline of the day. Cody, what you got?
You know, the more I think about it, the more I think I might have already used this headline of the day at a particular time last year, but I'm going to use it again. It is, we are back to our regularly scheduled programming. We thought that maybe there was a little bit of hope at the status quo being shifted up a little bit after Carlos Sainz taking that fantastic victory in Australia. But here we are, back to normal. Max Verstappen taking the pole, taking the win. Pretty sure he finished like 20 seconds ahead of the next non-Red Bull car. I've got a feeling it's going to be more of the same for the rest of the year unless his brakes explode again.
Well, mine is kind of in the same similar vein to yours. Mine is we dared to have hope and Max in the cherry blossoms then decided to come and crush it. And if you don't know what I'm talking about with the cherry blossoms, it is cherry blossom season in Japan, which is where we were. Normally, we don't get a chance to see them in full bloom, but that was a big talking point throughout the course of the weekend. And you could see them from different points on the track if you were, you know, I saw some shots at the paddock. So apparently, cherry blossoms in Japan, a big, big deal. So, but Max Verstappen, absolutely dominant on race day for sure on Sunday. There was a little tiny window of maybe some hope that the qualifying was a little bit closer. I do think teams are catching up to them a little bit in qualifying pace, but it's not enough. And once that Red Bull hits clean air, gone. And that was pretty much all she wrote. There were some overtakes actually for the lead. We'll talk about some of that in a little bit. But, you know, he had to at least earn it. It wasn't totally, totally dominant until the very end. But that Red Bull is so nice on its tires that – and on a track like this that is just eats tires for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. That was the car to be in for sure. All right. So we will hearken back to Saturday and the qualifying recap. All right. So going out in Q1, P20, the Kick Sauber of Zhao Grand Yu. He did not have a very particularly great qualifying session, and he gets last place on spin. P19 was Logan Sargent in the Williams. P18, Kevin Magnussen in the Haas. P17, continued pain for the Alpines. Pierre Gasly checks in there. P16 was Lance Stroll. This was probably the shock, especially given the fact that Aston Martin had brought big upgrades to the Japanese circuit. P15, advancing through to Q2 and celebrating it, getting the victories where they come. Esteban Ocon and the other Alpines. So they get a little bit of light shown on them. P14 was Alex Albon. P13 was Valtteri Bottas. P12, Nico Hülkenberg and the other Haas. So that was pretty good. And just missing out on Q3 was Daniel Ricciardo, who was knocked out by his teammate, Yuki Tsunoda, who checks in P10. P9 was George Russell. P8 was Charles Leclerc. P7 was Lewis Hamilton. P6 was Oscar Piastri. P5 was Fernando Alonso. Upgrades working well for him. P4 was Carlos Sainz. P3 was Lando Norris. P2 was Sergio Checo Perez. And in P1, with a lap time of 1:28.197, that was Max Verstappen in the Red Bull. All right. Cody, big thoughts on the qualifying.
Oh, where do we start here? Max Verstappen getting another pole. It seems to be more of the same. And he's got, I think, 4 in a row on the year, which, still got a little ways to go. But, you know, beginning to approach record-setting territory with that if he continues to take pole position for, I think, the next 3 races. I think the record is 7 in a row to start off the season. I think that was Alan Prost back in 1993. So let's just see if Max Verstappen can break more records there. what else we got? We got another kind of lukewarm qualifying performance from the Mercedes drivers. Keep waiting for Lewis Hamilton to kind of break this rut that he's in and get a top-notch qualifying performance. But he's only starting 7th this time, so not too great there. But at least he did outdo his teammate George Russell this time. It was good to see Esteban Ocon, sneak into Q2 there. And as we'll talk about into the race, that didn't really matter too much as we get later on. But not too big of a crazy mix-up here. I would say the thing I was most surprised by is you got Charles Leclerc all the way down in P8, which was pretty surprising considering Carlos Sainz, who has been pretty much consistently outperforming him this year, was all the way up in P4.
Yeah, I mean, I had a few notes. I guess I'll kind of go from kind of back to the front of the grid here. Surprised to see Magnussen that far down. I mean, we know they're not in the top. We know they're not on the top 5 for sure, but they're usually kind of the best of the non-top 5, or at least they had been in certain places, but obviously not here. I echo your point on Esteban Ocon. It was nice to see them have something to get excited about over at Alpine after a lot of pain. Alex Albon doing okay in the Williams, that's all right. But Yuki Tsunoda making Q3, that was a big deal, especially on his home race. And you mentioned the Mercedes, and here's the thing. Mercedes had gone into the weekend with actually a little more upbeat. Lewis Hamilton had called the Friday running one of his best Fridays in a long time. They were looking to maybe, try to overtake McLaren or possibly Aston in that kind of blob of, P3, P4, P5 there, in the terms of the faster cars. But not to be, obviously, once we got to the qualifying. But solid laps, I think, for Oscar Piastri. Solid laps. I think Lando Norris was kind of the standout. Almost nipping P2, if not for a valiant effort by Sergio Perez. And we give sometimes Sergio Perez a lot of guff on this show for not necessarily, shaping up and, looking like his teammate. But here, he was on it. His last lap in Q3 was actually very good. He only misses out on pole by just a few hundredths. So the qualifying at the top, very, very tight. So at least that was fun to see. Good battle throughout all of the sessions. So, but in the end, Thanos is inevitable. Max Verstappen just has that little bit edge, just enough to get it out when he needed to. So, don't really know what else to say about that. But, good job for Max there. All right, so we will now turn the page to the Sunday race, and we will start, as we are apt to do, with our back markers, and we'll start with the three drivers who did not finish. That would be Alex Albon in the Williams, who crashed out on lap one. We'll have to talk about that. He crashed out with Daniel Ricciardo in the V-carb there, so we'll have to talk about that incident. Joe Granu had what looked like a slow stop and then ended up having to retire the car later on due to some mechanical troubles. Don't know necessarily that I've gotten a full debrief on that, but he did not finish the race as well. So the classified runners, P17, Logan Sargeant in the Williams, P16, Pierre Gasly, P15, Esteban Ocon. So the great qualifying result didn't turn into a whole lot more for the Alpines there, or not even the great qualifying result, the better qualifying result, I guess we could put it that. P14 was Valtteri Bottas, and P13 was Kevin Magnussen. Cody, big thoughts on the back markers?
Well, first off, we've got two guys who could really stand to have a great race performance, or at least something better than what's been going on. We've got Alex Albon, who, you know, trashed the Williams chassis fairly recently, and, you know, we almost thought that we weren't going to see two Williams running in this race. Lo and behold, we get the one chassis repaired, and that is given to Logan Sargeant, who proceeds to possibly damage it a little bit in some of our sessions leading up to the race. But then, don't even get through one lap. Alex Albon gets in a big crash. Daniel Ricciardo gets in the same big crash. Daniel Ricciardo not looking good at the V-carb team right now, so he could definitely use a performance that stacks up against Yuki Tsunoda, and he did not get it here. So seeing them both go out at the same time within like the first sector of the first lap was pretty disappointing. It's not looking good for Williams or Ricciardo. Also, I mean, it's kind of disappointing, but it also makes me laugh really hard to see just how bad Alpine is doing. I mean, I think that Pierre Gasly and Esteban Ocon are great drivers, so I do feel for them in this situation. But seeing that Alpine is a manufacturer team, you know, Alpine is the sports branding for Renault, and seeing how they fired Amar Szafnauer last year, thinking that, oh, maybe he's like a big part of the problem here, he's not moving things along too quickly. And then seeing them going from a podium placing team down to the very bottom of the order here, they could not keep up with anyone during the race. They only finished ahead of Logan Sargeant because Logan Sargeant had an off. It really cracks me up, and it makes me wonder if they're going to be sitting here at the back for a long time. You know, maybe Audi comes in with Sauber and they're already ahead of teams like Alpine. It's kind of pitiful, but it's also kind of funny.
Well, it's going to be a long, slow road back to something for the Alpine guys. I have not heard any schedule on any sort of updates or massive changes to the car or any. You know, it seems like they've made whatever moves they're going to make, and they're just kind of playing this out until, you know, I heard something that said, you know, last third of the season is when they might be able to get something out of the pipeline. So maybe they're just writing the season off. I don't know, but it seems kind of stupid to do that. But maybe they, someone has to be having a vision, and that's part of the problem. I don't know what the vision is. I don't, you know, their team principal is really more of a, you know, he's kind of the replacement for Offner, so, you know, he doesn't really say a whole lot, so there's not a whole lot that I can really dig into, and I can say, well, okay, changes are coming. They're good things that might be coming in the pipeline. I just don't see it. And none of the reporting that's out there seems to indicate that it's about to get any better anytime soon, so I think you're going to see more pain for them. Can it stop raining on the Williams guys? My gosh. Some of this is of their own making, and I'm not going to spare them some criticism here, because, you know, if you didn't put the resources into making a spare chassis, and then you go to the first four or five races of the season where the walls are really tight on a lot of the tracks other than maybe Bahrain, I don't know that I feel all that bad for you, because you kind of made that determination and thought you could get through it. But seeing what has happened, my gosh, you know, you talk about the two guys who just needed a clean weekend, no problems, for the love of God, please, were Alex Albon and Logan Sargeant, and neither of them had that. Albon at least made it all the way to Sunday. Logan Sargeant wrecked in FP1, and any of the supposed updated parts that were on the Williams car all got destroyed. The chassis was okay, but they had to revert back to the old spec. And even with that, he was doing okay in the race, and then he has that off. And, you know, it's just like it never rains, but it seems to pour on teams when they struggle like this. So you've got two in the back, two big names. You know, Williams still is a big name. Alpine, like you said, that's a Renault works team that should have all the resources that it could want at its disposal. And it's just not working, and it's just painful to kind of watch. So, I'm with you on both of those, and I think those are kind of the highlights of the back markers. We should talk about the lap one incident that did bring out our first red flag of the season, and we got a second standing start because of it. Alex Albon and Daniel Ricciardo, Cody, you were right next to me when we were watching it. What did you see, and how did you see it?
I was at first a little surprised that they called out a red flag so quickly for it, and then when they showed the aftermath of the accident, it made a lot more sense because they really did destroy that tire barrier. It looked pretty bad. Both drivers ended up being okay, which is great. But both of them out of the way or out of the race right away. It looked like going through the turn, I think that was going into the first parts of the S's. Albon trying to make a move, sneaking up the outside of Ricciardo, and Ricciardo maybe didn't see him. Looked like he was preparing his line for going into the turn. Moved a little bit outside, and that was enough to run Albon off the road, and Ricciardo spun in sympathy, and they both nailed the wall pretty good. Like I said, tire barrier was destroyed. They had to call out the red flag because it did end up taking, probably about 20 minutes-ish?
I'd say it's a good 20-minute delay.
To make those repairs and get the race going again. It did give me what I like to see. You know, everyone thinks that the beginning of the race is one of the most exciting parts, the standing start. So we got two of those, which was great. Unfortunately, both standing starts kind of went the same way, which is Verstappen and Perez start taking off into the distance. But it's still exciting to get that twice, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the start, I would say the top six was pretty much unchanged. I mean, everybody pretty much kind of held their positions. There was, you know, on the first start, Carlos Sainz looked like he had an inside move on Lando Norris, but wasn't able to necessarily pull it off as Lando had the line on the outside, which then when you go into the S's, turns into the inside line on the next turn. So he was able to hold him off there. Piastri and Alonso, which was the first and second, both starts were kind of the first and second times that those two would duel throughout the course of the race, as that would become a theme later on. And advantage Alonso, as we'll talk about in a little bit. But I mean, it was surprising that it was a red flag because I was surprised at how much damage was done. But once you kind of saw that, it's like, okay, well, now I get it, because, you know, you would have lost maybe 8 or 9 laps trying to run that behind the safety car. So in that vein, it was the right call. It still kind of amazes me that when an incident happens, that they don't stop action immediately. Like, they let them go 3-4 more corners. And I'm like, okay, where's the safety car? They're obviously in the barriers. But they were being attended to. Like, there wasn't a safety reason or a safety concern that I had, that, you know, that people weren't getting attended to as quick as they could have been. But, you know, it's still kind of odd. But because of that, the first start counted. Anybody who did move up, and this was actually kind of confusing, because they first said, well, they're going to go back to the original order. Mm-hmm. And then they said that they're going to go back to now the second order, because they actually got to through sector one before they threw the red flag. So a little bit of clarification on the rules. Didn't change, I think, the result materially in any case. But, you know, that was kind of the lap one incident as I saw it. All right. So we will now move into the midfield, and P12 saw Lance Stroll in the Aston Martin, P11, Nico Hülkenberg in the Haas, P10, local boy doing good on home soil, Yuki Tsunoda in the V-Carb gets the point there. P9 was Lewis Hamilton. P8 was Oscar Piastri. P7 was George Russell. P6 was Fernando Alonso. P5 was Lando Norris. And P4 was Charles Leclerc, Mr. One-Stop Strategy, coming good for him. Cody, big thoughts in the midfield?
We'll start with, I'm very happy that Yuki Tsunoda was able to get his first points here in his home country, Japan. Great performance from him. Great performance from the team overall. There was a portion of the race where they had, what, five cars in the pit lane at the same time? Really awesome pit stop duel, pretty much. And unfortunately, I don't think they showed it live on the broadcast. We had to see it.
No, they didn't. God, was that annoying. Yes, you had to watch a replay. But it was all of a sudden, you just saw on the timing screen on the side there, in pit, which you'd almost never see.
Yuki Tsunoda gets out at the front of that, though, and being serious for a change rather than very sarcastic, he was giving his team a big old pat on the back for giving him a great fast pit stop, getting him out in front of everybody. And he ended up making it work, a strong performance. You know, he was one of those more back five teams that we consider VCARB to be, and he was still squeezing out a point. And I'm very, very happy for him. I'm imagining he's got to be very proud of himself for getting that point at Suzuka. In addition to that, Charles Leclerc, not the greatest qualifying performance, starting back in eighth, but Ferrari decided they were going to try something a little different for his strategy, and they went with a one-stop, which, all the broadcasters were saying that one-stop, not something that is pursued very often at Suzuka. Suzuka's pretty hard on the tires. But Ferrari, for a change, made a strategy like that work, which I guess is a sign of good things to come. Using that strategy, went all the way from 8th to 4th. Had the race been, 5 to 10 laps shorter, maybe could have even gotten the podium out of it. Alas, that was not to be, but a pretty impressive performance from him. I think he extracted the very most that he could out of that strategy.
Oh, yeah, I would totally agree. There was not any higher he was going to get. His teammate was clearly faster doing the two-stop strategy and having a better tire. And that fight was really not even one that even happened. So by the time Sainz got to Leclerc, that was pretty much over with. And Leclerc was, I think, fine with it because there wasn't any reason to fight that there. But because of that, he jumps several cars. He jumps Fernando Alonso. He jumped Oscar Piastri. He jumped Lando Norris in all of that, as well as the two Mercedes. So, they figured something out there with the long running. It didn't translate into qualifying, and there was definitely a disparity between what cars were really good in qualifying trim and what cars were really good on race pace. And Ferrari was one of the better ones, for sure, I think, on the race pace, and they were able to pull it off. Mercedes had tried the same thing. When they got the red flag, they came back out on a set of hard tires, which is usually something you wouldn't expect with a standing start, but they were able to get through it. And they were trying to do a one-stop, and then they could not make it work. In fact, they bailed on that strategy with both guys. Lewis Hamilton had a radio message that literally came over the air and said, change this strategy. That's pretty clear, good feedback there. Not able to so it kind of was more reverting back to, I think what you saw a lot in the Bahrain order was a lot what you kind of saw here in terms of the overall kind of pecking order. Red Bull, obviously, kind of in their own arena. Ferrari, close, but not able to really do anything here. McLaren, Aston, and Mercedes, again, kind of in that blob, and it's a tenth or two here, a tenth or two there. Comes down to execution. The fact that Leclerc and Norris both pitted at the same time, and it came down to a couple of tenths here or there on the pit stops, meant that once Leclerc stayed in front of Norris, he was able to do that. So, that was actually, a very good thing for his race. To talk about the McLarens, I would just say it was kind of a race of, they were eating their tires, I think, more than just about anybody in the top five. They could not eke out a whole lot of extra life. They short pitted both Lando and Oscar off the first stint. That worked out okay. If anything, actually, at one point, Lando was in front of Sergio Perez for a while. But then Perez, comes back with the tire advantage and passes him on track later. The move that was surprising to me was how short of a stint that middle stint was for Lando. They boxed him the same lap as Leclerc did, and they were expecting him to try to go like 26 laps on a second set of hard tires. And he was struggling by the end of that race. There were multiple lockups. He had a couple of near offs, especially in the second Degner. That spoon corner was, you know, you can clearly tell where the McLaren is lacking in some performance. It's the slow speed corners. It's that high, you know, jink 90 degree turns type deal. And Lando, luckily nobody crashed or anything like that. Didn't have any problems. But, you know, when you look at Oscar's race, he was stuck for a very long time behind Fernando Alonso. Mm-hmm. Could not get past, even with DRS assistance, especially on the main straight. And that ended up costing him late because he has a lockup when his tires are falling off, even though he pitted later than Lando did. And Russell was able to jump him with a little bit of contact and a post-race investigation that Russell was ultimately cleared of. Cody, how'd you see that, and did you think the racing was fair?
I thought it was pretty fair. It wasn't like an egregious running Piastri off the track, I would say. And Piastri's, you know, going to do what any driver's going to do, which is they're going to argue that case, even if it's not egregious, because they're going to hope that maybe the stewards are going to throw him a bone. He was very calm about the whole thing as well. You know, most drivers, they get tapped or run off the road like that, and they're screaming over the radio. Oscar Piastri's just like, yeah, he kind of moved me off the track a little bit, man. Oscar Piastri, like the most relaxed driver on the grid, I think, took things very well. But yeah, as far as the incident goes, I think George Russell took a little bit of an opportunistic move. Thought maybe he'd try to squeeze down the inside going into that turn. I think he tried to leave Piastri as much room as he could, and both of them trying to make the corner made like the slightest amount of contact. You could barely even tell that it happened from the onboard. Piastri ends up, you know, cutting the corner in sympathy, and I think that pretty much ended up clearing itself up anyway. You know, he ran, you know, maybe you could consider he ran Piastri off the road, but then Piastri got to cut the corner and pretty much gained the advantage back. So I think it was a self-policing incident. I don't think it was anything like awful on Russell's part. Their fighting over position ended up working out perfectly for Fernando Alonso, because I think had Russell been able to overtake Piastri a little quicker, he might have been able to make a move on Fernando. But essentially, Russell ran out of time there.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with, I think, your assessment there. Particularly, like, I think if Russell is able to use DRS down the straight and pull off the move you tried to do, maybe the stewards have a different view of all of this. Because he didn't, and because actually Piastri defended so well going into that turn one, he was going to force Russell to go off to the outside. So if Russell was going to pull that move off, he was going to hang it on the outside, and he was just not able to do that. Because of that, I think you're right. I think the both sides of it cancel out, the going off the track and gaining an advantage versus the being shoved off the track. I think that's probably the best decision, and that's kind of how I saw it as well. There was no damage to either car. So, you know, if they did touch, it was very, very light. And sometimes you see a lot of damage happen with sometimes like contact. So fortunate, I think, for both of them there. But yeah, I mean, I tend to agree with you on those points, and, you know, we already kind of talked about Leclerc there. So, all right, so we will turn the page and move into the podium. The smooth operator ends up in P3 and on the podium for the second consecutive race. Carlos Sainz, I'm still saying somebody had to sign that guy. I still think he's pretty damn quick. P2 was Sergio Checo Perez, and in P1, you didn't see much of him after the first two laps, and there wasn't really a need to, because just driving around on a Sunday afternoon in Japan, Max Verstappen in the Red Bull, 12.535 seconds clear of his teammate. Cody, thoughts on the podium?
Yeah, we were joking about it last night that in races like this, you barely see Max during the race. You see him a little bit at the beginning. You see him maybe when he makes his pit stops. And you see him at the end of the race when he inevitably takes the win. It cracks me up that, you know, he gets so little screen time for the dominant performances he's putting on. But I guess if you're just watching Max go around and around and around and, you know, pulling farther and farther away, it's not going to be exciting for anybody. So not too surprising, but another very strong performance from him. We had joked on the preview about the beginning of the revenge tour, and I think he's off to a very, very good start there. Perez, too, I would say had a very strong performance. He did end up finishing still 12 seconds behind Verstappen, but even so, he was clearly the second strongest driver throughout this race, was able to make very strong, good-looking overtakes following pit stops, made his way back up to P2 pretty much every time and without too much issue. We've seen some times in the past where Perez falls behind during pit stops and has a little bit of trouble making those overtakes, but he did very well this time and had a pretty clear P2, wasn't very close. So great racing from him there. If he keeps that up and Red Bull just keeps knocking 1-2s out of the park for the rest of the season, he's going to make a really good case to stay there, which is funny to say considering after the last race when he finished at P5, we didn't know that he had damage yet, that I was saying, man, this is the reason why Perez isn't going to be around next year. So he keeps making me swing back and forth there. But yeah, very strong performance from both Red Bulls. And Carlos Sainz, as you said, it is a wonder that he has not signed yet with any team for next year because he's doing fantastic. He is in the form of his life, outperforming Charles Leclerc through the three races that they've both participated in. And Charles Leclerc is considered a generational talent, you know, in the same caliber as Max Verstappen in most people's eyes. And to see Carlos Sainz, you know, putting the fight to him as well as he is fantastic. I'm very happy to see such a strong rivalry between two teammates at the moment. And yeah, there's not much else to say about that. I think he's he's putting on a great show for everybody. And yeah, he was on the stronger strategy this race, and I think that kind of makes sense. He had the better starting position, made that two-stop work very well, and overtook Charles Leclerc for the podium position with about 10 laps to go, I'd say, somewhere around there. And I think we might see this finishing order a lot this season.
Yeah, I mean, you almost have to wonder if Carlos Sainz has signed somewhere and they're just keeping it very, very much on the DL and they're waiting for, you know, a prime opportunity. Oh, I don't know, maybe May in Spain, you know, his home race to announce something. Because he doesn't seem like he gets brought up or, you know, it doesn't seem like when everybody asks him that he seems particularly worried. So I'm sure. And again, this is another performance that will go down into the CV and just say, yeah, somebody ought to sign that guy. I think he's actually doing quite well. So, and then to your point about Sergio Perez, I mean, it's really three out of four really good races. One, not so much. Maybe he heard you last race and said, I'm going to take it to that guy. He puts a Red Bull cap on and look what happens. But, you know, who knows? But, yeah, I think this was a very good response. You know, even if, you know, the damage story doesn't come out and we don't know that he has that, this is a good, great response, particularly to be so close to Max on qualifying pace. Yeah, not so much in the race. But he had no reason to be pushing. Either because they couldn't or, you know, that was just kind of what he could get out of the car. I think he was. I think he would obviously try to win a race if he can. But, you know, I think this is probably the most he was able to get. So it felt a lot like Bahrain. It felt a lot like the testing kind of order was kind of restored here overall in Japan. So, but yeah, I mean, so I guess we'll leave the Japanese Grand Prix review here. We're going to take a quick break. We will re-rack. We will come back. We'll recap what this did to all of the driver and the championship team standings as well. We'll talk about some fan emails. We got some good ones. We have some new contributors. So thank you very much for everybody who contributed to that, especially at the either late or early part of the day, depending on where you were in the world. We'll hand out some awards. We'll talk about some predictions. Had, I think, another first-time event happen in the predictions. So Cody should be smiling. He definitely should be. So come on back. We'll recap all that in just a little bit, and we'll get into it. You are listening to the Outlap F1 Podcast, and we'll be right back after this quick pit stop. Grab your flu powder, broomstick, or apparate to your favorite audio streaming service to join the discussion on Hogwarts, a podcast, where Dan and his friends have in-depth chapter-by-chapter breakdowns of each Harry Potter novel. Join the group as they dive into the magical world and discuss plot points, analyze character development, and occasionally go off the rails. Whether you're a muggle who's new to the series or a pure-blood wizard who won't need a remember-all, Hogwarts, a podcast, brings everyone to the Great Hall for a magical discussion. Hogwarts, a podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts. All right, welcome back in. This is season 6. This is episode number 10 of the Outlap F1 podcast. It's our 2024 Japanese GP race review. You've got Andy, and I'm along with Cody tonight, and we just wrapped up talking about the race itself. And now we're going to see where all of the Red Bull domination, what that did to the standings. So, Cody, if you'll do the top 10 drivers, I'll come in with the team standings.
All right. So, Max Verstappen still holding on to that lead, as you might expect in the driver standings. He's up to 77 points now and opening up that gap a little bit. It looked really close there for a minute after he retired from the last race. But now he is 13 points ahead of Sergio Perez, holding on to P2 with 64 points. Charles Leclerc also holding on to P3 in the standings for the moment with Ferrari at 59 points. However, Carlos Sainz, despite missing an entire race due to appendicitis, is hot on his heels now with 55 points in P4. Lando Norris, the first of the two McLaren drivers, is in P5 with 37 points. So a little gap there between the Ferrari drivers and the McLaren drivers at the moment. Oscar Piastri just behind him with 32 points. George Russell, the top of the two Mercedes drivers, is in P7 with 24 points. Tied with him on points, but behind, based on tiebreakers, is Fernando Alonso, splitting the two Mercedes. He also has 24 points. Lewis Hamilton, off to a bit of a rocky start to the season, as we've said time and time again. He is the lower of the two Mercedes drivers, and he has only 10 points at the moment, which puts him 1 point ahead of Lance Stroll in P10 in the other Aston Martin.
It just seems Lance Stroll always ends up in that P10 spot. And I just sometimes I don't even realize how, but he manages to get there. And I think actually with the point, Yuki Tsunoda actually now overtakes Oliver Bearman in the standings post P10.
Good, I think.
So good on Yuki for that. In terms of the team standings, Red Bull Racing Powertrains has reestablished its dominant form here for sure. They are now up and out in front of everybody. They are on 141 points. P2 is Ferrari. Still looking like a battle at this point, but definitely now there's some breathing room. If you're a Red Bull fan, they check in with 120 points. They are well clear of P3 McLaren, who check in with 69 points. The P4, P5 battle has gotten very interesting. P4 is Mercedes. They have 34. Only a scant 1 point in front of Aston Martin, who check in with 33. Big gap then back to P6. That's where you find the V-Carb Racing Bull team. So they check in with 7 points. Only 3 points ahead of Haas in P7. They check in with the 4 points. And P8, P9, and P10 all on zero. But that's Williams with tiebreakers, Kick Sauber, and Alpine. Like you said earlier, Cody, Works team at the bottom of the standings. Ouch. Okay, so we will now, you've heard our takes on the Japanese Grand Prix. We're now going to open up to the fan email segment. She was right on the button right away. We saw it. I wanted to point it out. Cody and I were together, and we saw the little notification pop up. So, Rachel Fleming, good on you for getting up early. We're from where you are. We were staying up really late from where we were. Cody, it's your time to shine on this one, so take it away.
Will do. And yes, Rachel, and he always jokes with me about how quick you are with your submissions after the race. And this time we saw it pop in, I think, before the podium had even happened. So Yeah, he's not kidding. You're a fast draw here. But thank you, Rachel, for your submission. She says, so normal service has resumed. I think most F1 fans knew that Red Bull were going to be dominant, were going to dominate, and they did. Not impressed, however, with the gap between Verstappen and Perez, since Perez didn't have the excuse of qualifying low this race. Guess who needed a quiet, incident-free race this weekend? Williams and Danny Ric, and neither of them got it. Personally, the crash looks like a racing incident with neither driver to blame, but it might cause problems for Williams with spare parts, especially when Logan Sargeant looks low in confidence as well. Danny Ric, however, looks like he may have a bigger problem on the horizon. Outperformed by Yuki again. I don't think Danny Ric had too much to put up against him with only a third of a lap here. But Yuki again, the knives are being sharpened by the press for Blood, and Lawson is a long shadow that's haunting Danny Ric. If this poor form continues, RB might do the unthinkable and give Lawson his seat instead. However, it's good to see both drivers walking away from the crash, and Yuki getting a point, which was nice to see as well in his home Grand Prix. He might be at the end of his competitive career, and I believe he might be at the end of his competitive career.
I think that's talking about Ricardo.
Danny Ric there.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, definitely worries about Danny Ric being at the end of his career. I feel like we've been saying that for a while. You know, both of his seasons at McLaren were not strong. He did have that one day in the sun when he got the win at Monza, which was awesome. I think that was one of the best races of that year. But yeah, he couldn't make it happen in McLaren. We saw blips of the old Ricardo last year in the second half of the season. But yeah, he's off to a really rocky start this time. And yeah, I'm in agreement with you here, Rachel, that if Danny Ric can't start putting together some strong performances and at least like keep up with Yuki in both qualifying and the race, I think, yeah, this might be his last season for real this time in Formula One.
Yeah, I mean, Helmut Marko is still around for now. And as long as he is not one to put up with lack of results. And we know what the Red Bull culture is. It's either you perform or you're not in the car. And they're not afraid to make a move in the middle of the season. They've done that. This would not be the first time they would have done something like that. So, and I thought I saw a story earlier this week that said that Ricardo has already kind of been given the hurry up by one Helmut Marko. So, yeah, you know, here's another instance where he's out of the race after a third of the first lap. So we didn't know how he would have attacked the race pace. Would his experience have led to somehow better tire deg or something like that? We'll never know. And because of that, you know, he's kind of, but you know, and then you got Yuki on the other end doing the job that he's being asked to do. But as we talked about with Sergio Perez, three out of the four races he's finishing P2. So where do you go? So I think Yuki's definitely doing enough to hold on to the seat that he has. I don't think Daniel Ricciardo has done hardly anything this season to hold on to the seat that he currently has. They have Liam Lawson, who's ready to go and raring to go and sitting there every week. And I think you say it very well, casting a very big shadow over one Daniel Ricciardo. So it sounds like the time bomb is already a ticking. And, you know, I like Daniel Ricciardo's personality. I think he's a great guy. I said this over and over again. You know, it annoyed the hell out of me that it couldn't work out at McLaren because there was so much synergy in branding, and him and Zach Brown are buddies. And, you know, I got to watch him drive a NASCAR around Circuit of the Americas, which was an awesome moment. So, you know, because of the win in Monza, but it just wasn't enough of it. And sometimes, you know, you have to also remember Fernando Alonso and Lewis Hamilton are exceptions to the rule. Generally, you don't get faster as you get older. And it's a testament to how good those two guys are, because I think Daniel's was in the hall of very good, not in the hall of great, but in the hall of very good. And I think it just might be time. It just might be time.
Yep. It's very sad to say that, but I think the rest of the season will give us a sure decision one way or the other. The next fan email comes in from the Formula, and this one legitimately cracked me up. The Formula says, I am writing to officially request a cancellation of my ticket to board the Logan Sargeant hype train. I, the consumer, have found more value and pleasure in boarding the trains of literally anyone else at this point. Sincerely, a frustrated American. a very entertaining way to state that. Yes, I have also fallen off of the Logan Sargeant pipe train. I was a little, you know, concerned about getting on it in the first place at the start of last year because I thought that there were drivers that were perhaps more deserving than Logan Sargeant of racing in Formula One, and it was somewhat of a stunt to get an American driver on the grid to try to draw in our fan base more. But I gave him the benefit of the doubt. I thought maybe he could develop into a better driver. And, you know, further part, Williams seems to think that he still can develop into that better driver. And I would be very happy to see it. But, you know, we keep giving him more and more chances to see what he's going to do. Williams is giving him more and more chances. They signed him on for this season. But he just doesn't seem like he's got it. He's wrecking all the time in all manner of different sessions and the race. He's not keeping up with Albon. He didn't keep up with Albon at all last year. It looks like it's going to be more of the same this year. And this time around, it looks like they're, you know, struggling to be a dominant force within that midfield. So every point that they get now really, really counts. And he, you know, looked like maybe he probably wasn't going to get any points yesterday. He looked like maybe he was kind of flirting with that 11th or 12th position at a couple points in the race when they were cycling through pit stops. But yeah, at the end of the race, goes off again, ends up finishing last of the finishing drivers. It's very sad to see. I don't think he's going to be back for another season unless he starts performing extremely well for the rest of the season. I personally think that we're going to see something like Mercedes signing on an established driver to fill a Lewis Hamilton seat. And then if he performs well enough, we're going to see Andrea Kimi Antonelli fill in Logan Sargeant's seat for a season or two while he's getting to grips with Formula One and eventually takes over that Mercedes seat. You heard it here first, folks, or probably not here first, actually. I'm sure there's a lot of people that have made that prediction. But yeah, I think the Logan Sargeant hype train has left the station and it's not coming back.
Yeah, I mean, my thought on him and Logan is this was the kind of the nightmare scenario. I mean, I hearken back to when he got announced and I was in my hotel room down in Texas, going to go to Circuit of the Americas for the pit lane walk. And, you know, all of a sudden here was this just shock announcement. And you got to remember that press conference was supposed to be the everybody against Christian Horner press conference when Red Bull had violated the cost cap. So, you know, Sky actually was showing it live. And here was, you know, the guy at Williams that said, oh, excuse me, we have some news to break. You know, you're going to get an American on the grid, you know, next year if he can get a super license. So that was actually the news of the entire press conference. But from that, my initial thought was that's great. I loved it. But I also thought this is probably the worst situation for an American to try to come into and be successful. Simply because you had a team that didn't have a lot of resources at its disposal. You've now seen some big change at the top, which meant that now James Vowles has come in. He's seen just how deep the hole really was that they have to dig themselves out of. Mm-hmm. He's doing the best that he can to try to dig themselves out of it. But in the same vein, it doesn't help. The car doesn't become any easier to drive. You know, they're trying to rush parts. They're trying to do all this stuff. It adds probably a ton of extra pressure. And maybe he wasn't ready, or maybe, you know, this isn't, maybe he's not one of the 20 best and probably shouldn't be on the grid. I've always said that even if he's not in Williams or on the grid next year, I think he's going to catch on as a reserve somewhere. He's definitely still got some talent, but his head is all over the place and his team have done him no favors. Like I said, this is kind of the nightmare scenario kind of come to fruition. I get the sentiment. I totally get it. You know, I'm going to continue to hope that something comes good for him, but it doesn't look good right now. And if there isn't a drastic change between now and the end of this season, I can't see him being back on the grid next year at all.
Next in, we have a question from Dave Doherty. He says, or he asks your thoughts on the Albon Ricciardo contact. We did go into that a little bit. I think that it was a first lap racing incident. You got everyone bunched together. Ricciardo is just trying to take his racing line. Doesn't see Albon, and they both end up out of the race. If you want to apportion a little bit more blame to Ricciardo, I guess you could, but I don't think it was anything egregious. Definitely doesn't look good for both of them, though. We've talked about Williams' struggles with, you know, having parts and chassis that are in functional shape and the risk of not having two cars at a race and continuing to run off the road and crash and wreck cars definitely doesn't help that at all. So that's not good for Williams. Also not good for Ricciardo, who's trying to prove that he still belongs in Formula One. And I, for one, would love if he could prove that. Really hard to prove that when you're only in the race for a third of the lap and then it's all over and you don't get to, you know, show your stuff. So, a very unfortunate event for both of them.
Yeah, I think it was kind of two guys being very, very desperate on the first lap, trying to get as much as they could out of that first lap because it is so difficult to overtake in general without a massive tire offset here. And because of that reality, they were all trying to go for whatever was there, even if it wasn't there. And I think you saw Albon kind of push wide and Ricciardo, I think you, Cody, you said it very good when we were talking about it earlier. He was trying to set up for that next turn in the S's. He was trying to, you know, define where his line was going to be. Had no idea Albon was out there. You know, I think they even said it in the race commentary. You know, Ricciardo is looking left and the contact came from the right. So therefore, how could he see that Albon was there? And, you know, from Albon's perspective, it looks like Ricciardo kind of closes the door, which he does, but he didn't know, realize he was there and didn't realize he was closing a door on anybody. So I think it's a classic lap one incident. It's a racing incident. I'm glad the stewards took no further action. There wasn't really any further action. It was, you know, I'm sad to see the two guys who needed to have some good results couldn't get any.
Yep, I agree. And lastly, we get a new contributor. This one's from Julie at the tag Jules_M. And she says, dull. Regretfully switching off to this sport where even the drivers seem bored of their inability to actually race. Too sanitized, too predictable. Which is a pretty scathing review of what's going on, I'll admit. Definitely, you know, a perspective that is pretty strong out there right now. And, you know, Formula One, history has shown many eras of dominance. You don't even have to look back too far. We had Lewis Hamilton dominating for many years. And before him, you had Michael Schumacher dominating for many years. And then you had McLaren between Ayrton Senna and Alan Prost dominating for many years. Like, it's something that just happens in Formula One due to the nature of the sport of, you know, bigger teams with more development and opportunities and money, being able to sign better drivers and develop better cars and, you know, the rules last for an amount of time where someone inevitably builds the best car and, you know, is therefore starting ahead in the development race. It just happens in Formula One. And if you are a fan of one of these all-time greats, say like Lewis Hamilton, for instance, if you're a big Lewis Hamilton fan, this does have to be a little painful to watch at the moment because, you know, Lewis Hamilton is one of the, in many people's eyes, the greatest Formula One driver of all time. And for three consecutive seasons now, in this new era of regulations, Mercedes hasn't been able to give him a car to fight at the front. And, you know, if he's your favorite driver and you've seen him fighting for championships and winning them over Nico Rosberg, Sebastian Vettel, Max Verstappen, that one is up to debate. But anyway, it's got to be a bit of painful to watch right now. And with how strong Max Verstappen, Max Verstappen's dominance has been, which is perhaps the strongest domination we've ever seen in the sport, it's, for a lot of people, probably boring. I, in my humble opinion, think it's a pretty amazing thing to see just how good these drivers are and how long their domination can last for. But yes, on a per race basis, it does get kind of boring just to see the same drivers, you know, starting at the front, finishing at the front. We're probably going to see a lot of between Red Bull, Ferrari, McLaren, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 finishes this year. And that's just the name of the game in F1.
Yeah, and when I first got this, I had a lot of the same thoughts that you did. And I can understand where and why the sentiment is out there. What I think you're having this season, and it's a lot more apparent than in others, even in like the Mercedes era of domination, you had lots of scraps amongst P4, P5, P6, P7, P8, and all the way even down to the lower ends of the points. And different teams were better at different places. Here, what I've seen in 24 is there is a definite established gap. And that gap, even across most of the venues we've been to so far, really hasn't changed. You've seen Red Bull be out front. You've seen Ferrari kind of at their heels, but not really able to do much. You've seen then McLaren kind of be almost sometimes on an island on their own. Mercedes and Aston are fighting it out, and that's what you see in the standings and all that. But there's no change in that, which we haven't seen yet. We haven't seen a Mercedes finish in front of that blob yet. We haven't seen the Astons get in front of McLaren at any place yet. And it's very indicative of what you kind of see in the lap time data. I think I even mentioned it to you last night where I go, oh, look, there's Red Bull, 0.2 in front of Lando. There's Lando, 0.1 in front of Russell, you know, 0.1 in front of Hamilton. And it was just that gap, regardless of what anybody did. Now, they threw a whole lot of different tire strategies at it, but that ultimate pace gap was still there. And I think that's what leads to it not looking on television like a very exciting race. I can tell you, you ride along with the onboards, the drivers are pushing. They're definitely doing that. It's not meant to look like your word was sanitized. It's certainly not meant to look that way. It comes across that way because there's not enough disparity between there's not enough gap in the lap times, and we also haven't seen the rash of upgrades yet. And that's also, I think, due to the calendar. You know, we start here with what everybody's got. We've seen some teams bring upgrades. We've seen Aston Martin were the first, but we're still not going to see that big rash of upgrades, or we're not going to see anything really, I think, significantly different in the standings until we get to Imola. And, you know, we've got two races now with sprint weekends. Maybe that does something, maybe it doesn't. But I can understand the sentiment. What I would tell you is this sport always gives it to you when you expect it last, when you expect it the least. So the second you think you understand it, the net race in China might just be the banger of the season. So that's what always tunes me in, even when that's why I always continue to tune in, even when a lot of the season might appear to be kind of relatively predictable.
Well said.
All right. So we will transition now into our awards. And first off, thank you to everybody for contributing to the Fanny Mail segment. It is always my favorite part of our review. All right, so now we will transition into our awards. I have a couple candidates for the rubbish, but I think yours is pretty much on point here, Cody. So I'll let you take it. What you got?
My rubbish award, and you maybe got this sense earlier on, my rubbish award's going to Alpine because for a works team to be the worst performer out of all teams is somewhat laughable. They have the budget of a manufacturer and personnel on their side and access to all manner of personnel and systems and development. And it's kind of sad to see them struggling so much, but at the same time, it's a little funny to see, you know, teams like Sauber and the second Red Bull team, the V-Carb team, performing better than them. And it's kind of shocking how quickly they've fallen. It's, you know, not like we've had major reg changes or anything like that between last year and this year. Last year they had a couple of podiums. This year they're at the very bottom with two young and hungry, talented drivers. So, you know, it's not on them. It's clearly not on, you know, at least alone on Otmar Szafnauer's running of the team. They've got a lot of things going on at Alpine behind the scenes, and it's all leading to them not being able to keep up with the development race in this reg era. Maybe at this point they're just, you kind of mentioned earlier that perhaps they're writing it off at this point, writing off the season. Maybe at this point they're just writing off this whole set of regs. You know, we all know there's new aero and new engine regs coming in 2026. Maybe they're starting to look toward that future and thinking maybe that's the time to start over. But Alpine kind of seems to come and go from the sport. Maybe they're thinking they're done. Who knows? But it's a little sad either way. And I thought that their performance since the beginning of the season, but also in Japan, was pretty laughable.
All right. Well said. my reaction to that on Alpine would be, I think the problem has been the tone at the top has been really poor. They didn't have clear directions. They didn't have clear directives. They thought that they could show up with their, Renault engine and, their own, carte blanche or whatever that you want to call it. And that would just be enough, to get them somewhere in Formula One. And it just hasn't been. And they churn through personnel. And, there was, I remember reading a lot of stories about the fact that the English speaking staff and the French speaking staff couldn't gel together. And, they were sleeping in different hotel rooms and, they didn't want to spend any time together. And it just, and we've chronicled on this show some of the stuff that Alpine Legal had done or not done with, the Oscar Piastri contract, which was a complete own goal. It just doesn't seem, to me that it's going to get any. The worst part for me is I don't see a way out of this. This looks like a very long, dark tunnel without a lot of light at it right now for that team. So they may be in the recipient of this award for a little bit here. So I had two. One is really just kind of an overall cost cap type thing. I must be missing something because I thought the whole point of the cost cap was we were supposed to be past the idea of teams not having the third chassis, not having spare parts or adequate spare parts. Wasn't this supposed to be solved? Aren't all these teams worth $1 billion? Isn't that why Andretti isn't here? Are you kidding me? It just drives me crazy that we're still having 2014, 2015, 2016 issues repeat themselves in 2024 in an era where you're supposed to have a cost cap, where all the valuations on all these teams is apparently through the roof. Something's not adding up here. It just makes me, revives my whole reaction to the Andretti nonsense. Like really? Like they couldn't come in and they weren't going to do better than what Alpine's doing or what Williams is doing. It just makes me angry. And so I want to throw all that discussion into the bin. And then the other one is I'm just so done as an analyzer of data, trying to overanalyze the Friday running. The Friday running is not indicative. It's not predictive. It doesn't translate into qualifying anymore. We only had really one meaningful session of FP1, and I listened to so many overanalyze the crap out of the 10 laps in FP1 like that was supposed to serve as any sort of harbinger for the weekend. Guess what? It's not. There's one part of the free practices that is indicative now, and that's the long race running. So why don't we just do that, give them the adequate time to run that type of stuff, get their tire data, and move on from there, because it certainly doesn't talk about qualifying. Because if you would have thought going into that Mercedes were going to be the belle of the ball and McLaren were nowhere, and then qualifying happens, it's exactly the opposite of the two. Ay, 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 just drove me crazy. Anyway, so we'll move on. I'm done ranting. We'll move on to the analysis paralysis. Cody, what you got for this one?
It does seem like Ferrari and Charles Leclerc were the only ones who were really able to make a one-stop strategy work. It looked like they were going to go that route for Mercedes. The Mercedes of Lewis Hamilton and George Russell were out there for a long time on their tires. And as you said, Lewis at one point came over the radio saying, pretty aggressively, change the strategy. Very clearly not believing in what they were doing and that was going to work. It's not really good that he doesn't seem to have faith in the strategies that Mercedes are running at the moment. And it didn't really work for them. They finished toward the bottom of the points-paying positions. So we said Lewis Hamilton all the way down at P9, which is really unfortunate. So, yeah, my analysis paralysis going to Mercedes and their race plan.
Yeah, I think they are a perfectly good candidate there. Yeah, they certainly that strategy didn't pay off. I thought the other team that kind of almost threw something away a little bit was McLaren. And I keep coming back to, I'm not liking the fact that I keep saying putting them in this award, even though they're doing relatively really well. But I did not like the timing. I even said it to you at the time. I didn't like the timing of that second stop for Lando Norris there. I thought it might have possibly cost him P4. I thought maybe had he been able to kind of get some clean air, maybe do one more lap, and not come in the same lap that Leclerc did, he might have been able to get out in front, and maybe because of that, he might have been able to hold that position. Maybe it's doubtful given the relative pace of or the lack of degradation that Leclerc had. I saw a graph that said that Leclerc was by far the nicest and kindest to his tires, even more so than Max and the Red Bulls. So maybe it doesn't even matter, but I just thought that was one of those when I heard the call, I stopped to look at the onboard and I went, what? And Lando was like, what? So I agreed with Lando there where I'm like, huh? Oh, okay. Let's see if it works for you. And, you know, they came back and then the debrief, they said that we were trying to be aggressive. We were trying to go for a podium. Well, okay. At least I get that, but you know, it didn't work. So unfortunately this is where you got to go when it doesn't work. All right, so moving on to the dark horse, I think we're going to have some consensus here. I'll go first really quickly. I'm also going to say I think this is going to be the new guy in the not top five teams who gets points award, and Yuki Tsunoda happened to do that, so therefore, Yuki Tsunoda, you get the dark horse award from me. Cody, what's your thought here?
I agree with you that that's probably the direction this award's going to go for the rest of the season in most capacities, but... I also agree that Yuki Tsunoda was a bit of the dark horse, although I guess you could argue that he is not even really a dark horse anymore. He is consistently making up those last points-paying positions or just barely missing out. But in this one, we'll give him that award because he also managed to, for the first time, score points at his home Grand Prix, which is amazing to see.
Yep. All right, so our driver of the day... Looks like we actually have some consensus on this one, too. So I'll go first with this one. It's not who you think. I'm not going to give it to Max because Max just does Max things. So I'm going to give this one to Charles Leclerc, who is known in Formula One annals for being the great qualifier without necessarily the great race pace. Well, today he put a good mark out there, or in this race, he definitely said he's got some race pace and he's got some ways to preserve tires in his back pocket. If that becomes a harbinger of things to come, that's really important for him overall. So I'm going to give this to Charles Leclerc. I'm going to go with the fans. He was the fans recipient of the Driver of the Day Award because he made that one stop work. There was nobody else who could do it. So good on you for making that thing work and a hard-earned P4 because of it.
I agree with you that Charles Leclerc is going to be my Driver of the Day. He had the most to gain, I feel, in this race, at least reasonably so. Qualified down in eighth. We know that Ferrari is quite strong, and so had a chance to finish up at the front, and he made the very most out of an alternate strategy, made that one-stop work, got pretty much as far up the field as we could have hoped for him to get. It would have been nice to see him on the podium in this one, especially since he was racing with a Jules Bianchi helmet with his number on there. Jules Bianchi passed away in a race several years ago and was a friend and mentor to Leclerc. So seeing him pay homage to him was really nice to see. And it would have been cool to see him with that podium, that helmet up on the podium. But he got as close as he could get, I think. And that's why he's going to make my driver of the day.
All right. Very good there. All right, so now we will talk about our predictions and the results therein. And Cody, you're riding high, sir. catching quads in poker and nailing. I think this is also an Outlap F1 podcast first. I don't know that we've ever had anybody sweep the bonus picks before. I'd have to go back and look. But you managed to do this. So you got 7 points on the weekend. You got the pole sitter for Max. You got the fastest quali time. Your quali time was actually ridiculously close. So well done, sir, there. P1 on the podium. P3 on the podium because you had Sainz taking the bronze medal there. But here's your bonus picks. P9, P10, and P11. You got them all in that order. So that gives you the advantage over me. I didn't have a bad weekend myself. I gave you at least a fight. I ended up with 5 points. I got the pole sitter. I got P1 on the podium. I got the fastest driver. I got the fastest lap time. We were actually almost a second off of our fastest lap time. So maybe the Red Bull wasn't pushing as much as we thought it could have. And I got P10 on the bonus pick. I had Yuki Tsunoda coming home in P10, but that was all I was able to do there. So, yeah, it was your bonus picks that give you the hard-earned Japanese GP win on the weekend, and I tip my cap, sir, because of that. That's a hard thing to do. We typically make those bonus picks hard so that we don't do that. But so well done. Well done. All right, so that will wrap up pretty much our rundown on the Japanese Grand Prix weekend. We will have off weekend, and then it's a short break, and then we're on to China, which is a venue we have not been to since before the pandemic. I think it was 2019 was the last time we were there. Mm-hmm. It does have a very, very long straight and a very, very interesting turn one, which will drive the engineers and the Pirelli tires crazy, I am sure. But I'm looking forward to that. It's going to be another one of those late night, early morning races. We're inching our way into actually having races on Sunday. This one ended at 2:30 in the morning. China, I think, is actually going to be a little bit worse. So it may be pre-nap time and then race for moi. I don't know. But I'm going to try to get my run-up of sleep between now and then. So, Cody, any final thoughts?
Very excited to see the Chinese Grand Prix. As you said, hasn't occurred for many years now just because of China recovering from a COVID pandemic. There are drivers on the grid, quite a few of them, in fact, I think, that have never raced on the Chinese circuit, which is going to be interesting for them. It's an interesting design for a track. I haven't seen it in a very long time, so it almost feels like seeing a race at like a new circuit in a way, because it's been what, like 4 years. So I think it's going to be very exciting. I do think Red Bull's going to probably dominate, but we're going to forget about that for a couple weeks.
Well, we'll see what's in the cards. Maybe more weather, we may have the possibility of weather. That's usually one of the variables at this track. It has seen some epic rain in its time. And it's seen some very interesting races in its time too. So, I'm thinking of the Fernando Alonso. I'm going to pit 5 times and just keep throwing soft tires at this car and win because of it. So that can happen, and we'll see what all that brings. So yeah, look out for a preview from us. Probably not this Wednesday, but the Wednesday after. And then we'll try to come on back and review the last of the Asian leg before they come. And it's our first sprint weekend. So we're going to have the new revised, slightly revised sprint format. So we'll get into all that and get y'all up to speed on what to expect for that. So for Cody, and kudos, I didn't get a chance to do it when we do it in our awards, but Cody's fiance gets an honorary driver of the day because she was so patient with both of us last night at a very early hour of the night at a friend's house to get everybody home on time, all good. So just wanted to take a moment and shout her out as well. So for everybody connected to the show, it's always fun to do this. We'll be back in a week and a half time. But until then, may all your laps be fast.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Outlap F1 Podcast. If you like what you heard, click that subscribe button and be sure to leave us a 5-star review. If you want to connect with us outside of the show, check out our website at www.outlapf1.com. Find us on Twitter and Instagram at @OutlapF1Podcast or email us at chatnow@outlapf1.com. As always, thank you so much for your support, and we'll see you on the next one.